is Irene Kurka, and I welcome you to my podcast Neue Musik Leben. This is a German podcast, but once in a while I do an English episode, like today. I have studied classical singing, but I have been singing contemporary and experimental music for a long time now, and I really enjoy it. If you would like to know more about me, please look at my website www.irenekurka.de, but I will put this in the show notes. There you could also subscribe for my newsletter. In this podcast, I talk about contemporary experimental music. I share with you behind the scenes, and I really want to bring the human beings out of the new music world closer to you. I'm cooperating with the NMZ, Neue Musikzeitung. This is a German music paper. Today my interview is with Marianne Schuppe. Marianne Schuppe is a composer, a singer, and an artist. And she will tell you everything what she's doing, because she's doing so many things. And I'm glad to know her. I'm also glad that, we could meet at the Klangraum Düsseldorf in July and record this interview for you. So please enjoy the interview with Marianne Schuppe. Hello, Marianne Schuppe. Welcome to my podcast.
Hello, Irene.
Yeah, it's so great to meet you here in Düsseldorf at the Klangraum in 2020. Very special circumstances, but you're here and we're working together. The first thing I would like to know is, how did you find your way into new and experimental music?
Big question. I was a long time ago already convinced that experimental music, or so-called experimental music, or what I thought experimental music would be what I was interested in. And it came out of a strong resistance towards offered roles after having studied classical singing. So I was lucky in my first singing teacher in Hildesheim already was in contemporary music, because her husband was a composer, and she started a little improvisation group, which was quite different from what I later and now regard on free improvisation. But it opened up a door already when I was like 21. And so that might have been one of the first moments. Then after getting my first exam, I was very keen to find out new ways for myself. Went to South India to study there, or, get an insight by practicing South Indian Carnatic music. And I really wanted that. At the same time, listening to these long concerts, I found quite difficult. And I really had to tell myself, you wanted to be here, so now you stay until the end of the concerts. And it might have been hours and hours, as it is in Indian music. And through that, staying and going through my resistance, or my not understanding of what was going on, I think I developed a certain, in German we say Kondition. Mm-hmm. In English it would be condition. I don't know if it's
conditioning, maybe.
Conditioning, yes. To not run away if something is strange for me in the first moment, but really stay with my curiosity.
But what was strange? Just the length, or the type of music, or the type of people, or how they behaved?
Well, the repetitiveness, mm-hmm. The duration, And, not so much happening. You're over long stretches of time, little developments, not understanding any of the language, not knowing what it is about. I think mostly that. Mm-hmm, yes. Mm-hmm. And, sometimes also outer circumstances, like really hot, mm-hmm. being very strong heat, bad air, noises of fans going into these halls,
So back in Europe, you were more used to like concert that whatever last an hour or 2 hours,
yes,
and they had different shorter pieces in it.
And even Indian music in Europe, that was somehow tailored,
yeah,
for European condition or conditioning, you know. And then that was in South India, Madras, 1983. It was hardly any tourists there because usually musicians went to North India or more to the east. And it was very, very, very traditional.
So how long did you stay there?
5 months.
Okay. And what happened then throughout the process? I mean, you got over this resistance. And
yes,
then
I got over this resistance. I really started, of course, to find my way in through listening, through my ears. People started to recognize me because I was more or less the only white younger woman attending. They would start talking to me. And also, as I was taking lessons, I would start to understand bits, at least of the form.
But then it's maybe something like a seed, and then you went back, and then it would grow eventually.
Yes, it was like a seed. That's a very good picture. When I went back and started to be interested in free improvisation, and really free improvisation scene was something quite different from what had been in the university. Again, there were quite a few things going on I found so strange. I didn't find very easy to listen. At the same time, it was like a smell. There's something that I'm really, really interested in. It's more like a soft vision, something at the horizon that makes you think, this is something I would like to know more about.
Yeah.
And I had this training now from South India, you know, not to run away, not to resist if I didn't understand, not to say this is bullshit if I didn't understand, just say, let's see what happens if I stay. Let's see what happens if I go next week again to the concert or so
on. You said that
so
you kind of got in touch with the improvisation when you were around 20 through your voice teacher.
Yeah.
So you never heard a contemporary music piece before in your life? Was it actually that late?
Okay. No.
Very interesting. Okay.
Well, that time, you know.
And when you had those teachers, I mean, you worked with a Japanese woman who was like a big Chelsea person. That was all after.
Much later. Yeah.
Okay.
So I studied 79 to 82, 83. That was my first studies. Well, music in university and singing. Before I was in piano and had long-term lessons. I started when I was 6 with a very good teacher. But contemporary music popular music was something every teenager discovers for herself, I think. But as my mother was in old music and as a viola da gamba player, so I was very familiar with old music and house music traditions, all playing on different recorders and singing. But contemporary music was not what I got to know through my home.
Yeah, it's interesting, but you also have those other interests. I mean, you're writing, you're also in visual arts, so you're very multi-layered artist.
I was not very specialized then. I mean, I was really also very much in visual arts. First more in painting, then more in sculpture. Coming back from India, I did a diploma in contemporary dance.
Great.
So I was more or less putting my foot in different fields of art and contemporary arts, trying to find my spot. And in that way, also during my studies, I was not so focused on really music or contemporary music. And it was a very small university. It was a very new interdisciplinary study possibility where you could have two arts parallel. It was almost an experiment for the university. So everything was rather small.
But then it's very open-minded, which is also nice.
It was very open-minded and it has developed very well since then. But that was really the beginning then.
I actually looked up when we first met. It was 2009. At the Momo Musico Aarau, which
Jörg
Frey has organized back then. And then we also met at Trier Opening, where you sang the Feldman piece, which I really like. I like your live performance, and I like the CD you made. And and then we met again, and now you're also part of Wandelweiser. And when I also think back to 2009, I feel that so many things have changed with you, or also I think your approach to things. What has happened?
Could you tell me what you think has changed? Very interested to hear that.
Oh, I'm not sure if I can really grab it. I'm very curious how you would describe it.
Well, it's always harder to notice differences in your life because quite a few decisions are not necessarily made actively, but happen. Certainly, I'm much more focused on developing my music. When we met 2009, I hardly dared to compose anything.
Oh, so there were just like the beginnings.
It was the absolute beginning.
Ah, okay. Interesting.
It was the absolute beginning. And actually, I had been in free improvisation for many, many years. I had enjoyed it. I had many doubts about free improvisation, getting stuck into patterns as well, which were starting to bore me. And Jörg invited me in his series, and he said then, you know, could you think of doing that piece? So there was the Taku Sugimoto, wonderful little psycho, and there was Pizarro. And then he said, I think you might have something also of your own compositions. And I thought,
ooh. Okay.
It was Jörg. Jörg who really said, you know, come out with something of your own. And then I had this little idea of the Tidstrand piece, which actually was the first piece that I composed in such a way, not just for me, but also for me with instruments that was performed there much, much earlier. In the end of the 80s, I had sort of concepts made for my solo voice. But that was quite different then. So it was really by encouragement of Jörg. And then also, well, we met and Antoine was there. And Antoine came after and said, well, I like the piece. And then when we said goodbye, he said, oh, see you soon.
Oh, how nice.
So that, in a way, was a big step forward. And according with that, my personal life changed because we had at that time already bought a home in a house, old house in France, and we were going there more and more, my husband and me. So I had a lot of time just with myself or with him, but he is not a musician. So I had a lot of time to work just on my own and not fitting anybody's expectations, but I don't mean this negatively. I mean not just studying pieces from somebody, sometimes that happened as well, but really to think, okay. And I had a commission for a solo piece, a bigger commission, so I really started to work with myself there in a very pure concentration. And probably the whole life out there, the quietness, the surroundings of just, nature, trees, very simple life have influenced me much more than I realized then. And really, out from that, then my songs were developed.
Yeah.
You know, which are quite different from music that I did before because they are rather quiet. They work with text. I don't use my, let's so-called classically developed voice or even big voice. And I think they reveal quite a bit of things that have changed gently, but then the product suddenly is there and it seems almost like something completely different.
Yeah, I understand what you mean. That often happens with things.
Yeah.
You just do it and then suddenly it goes somewhere or somebody else or like a journalist or somebody gives you a label and they're like, okay, I'm that now. How did that happen? How did I get there?
Yeah.
We also saw each other in 2017 when I sang at a concert or a concert series you organized for IGNE Basel. And we also had some talks there, which I really enjoyed. And there was one talk at this restaurant after all the concerts were through, which was for me also very awakening, where I really understood in a way the difference between a person who wants to compose and a person who is an interpreter. Because for me it was always, and I still think about it at when I see you again, for me it's always so fascinating that I can dive into different pieces, different styles, and it really makes me happy to like just to wear different clothes. Yeah. But sometimes I thought maybe I should be more into that or that, or say, no, I only do this. And then I met people who were more like, oh, I only sing this repertoire or this. And for me, it was like, why should I do that? Mm-hmm. But I never had this intention to compose. I mean, I like organizing things. I like to really go into the music that somebody else has written and just enjoy myself in there. And I also enjoy the variety. Mm-hmm. And when I would think I would compose, I'm like, how would I compose? Because it's like, since I enjoy like everything so much, mm-hmm. I wouldn't even know what style I should compose then. And then when we talked about it, and you said for you, it was, I mean, you were always very focused on certain repertory, also with your voice and your life. And now you compose more, you are a composer, so I think it's probably really a very different mindset or approach or something that keeps you going and what keeps me going. But then I suddenly realized, okay, I'm an interpreter and that's fine and I'm so happy with it. And she's a composer and she's also happy with it and that's great. And I don't need to limit myself and say, no, I only sing now this repertory, because that's just not me. And so in a way I found that, very awakening for me back then.
Oh, that's wonderful. I also have some glimpse of memories of that talk that we had. I think I have had the other thing around, you know, when I was always quite restrictive with repertoire, I would even get pieces composers suggested for me or said, I want to write something for you. And I was getting more frightened than happy about it. So what kind of projection is this person going to put on me? And I also had experiences that people would have written something for me and I found it so extremely difficult to get into that piece in many ways. And we were both getting very unhappy, actually. So I became very, very cautious, because I had this several times that people, composers, would hear me in a concert, listen to my voice, and came and said, I want to write something for you. And I found out, I'm very honored, but I'm not the right person. And also, for a while, we had a vocal ensemble with three other singers in Switzerland in the early zeros. And there was at least one or two of them that were excellent interpreters and excellent in, and I don't mean this negatively, serving a piece. Mm-hmm. And I was really impressed about their, call it devotion, and again, not in a negative way, to really find out what does this person want and what is the idea and how can I find my way into it. And I very, very clearly realized I'm not the right person for that.
But I'm just what you describe. I feel very devoted and serving.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, I admire people like you who, you know, also have their musical expression in a way through the composing.
I mean, it's biographical with me. I can, you know, very well trace it back to my biography, why I'm like that. And it has nothing to do with my voice or my possibilities, but really with my mindset about that I have always been very strongly trying to find my own thing. And Well, that started with when I was 16, I already was making little poems and songs, but not taking it serious, not at all. Then I went into drawing, painting, sculpturing. And again, that was finding, in a way, my own handwriting. Then it went through into dance, which again, actually there I started with improvisation. And then the dancers would ask me to sing for them. So I was improvising with my voice and they would dance. And my first productions on the stage were with dancers or with one dancer especially. And so then I continued with music, a little bit more shy to really develop my own handwriting. And I was a little bit oscillating between interpretation, improvisation and stuff. And it took me quite a few years and some very painful experiences to realize that's not good for me. And I have to have the courage to say, I do my own thing. Even though in many ways that's more difficult. It is, it's a work which is just lonesome. And in between, I forgot to say, I was also in writing. I started in, 15, 20 years ago, also to have mentoring with a writer, starting to show my texts, which had always been there, but show to somebody and say, well, how can I work on them? So finding my own handwriting went through these different media until they arrive now in composition, which again has a lot to do with text, less with visual art, more with text. And I'm really convinced now that's fine for me. And the price is, in a way, that you are alone. I mean, Wandelweiser is a special case which offers a community which is so wonderful about Wandelweiser. The other thing is that the world is not so interested in you. I mean, if you have said my repertoire is such and such, if I would have continued like with Chelsea, I could do a lot more concerts. Mm-hmm. And, it took me some years to mature, to really come to that point to say, that's fine.
Yeah.
It's very fine for me. And as a composer, I really feel I'm still a beginner. Having started and just starting to find out in what direction it could
continue. You just mentioned Wandelweiser. What does Wandelweiser mean for you, and how did you kind of became part of it? Or
That really happened. It was this concert and the encouragement by Jörg Frey, which was definitely a stage. And then a little bit later, but it must have been already quite some years. I went for mentoring with Antoine because I had seen on the website that this was possible. And then he invited me to do a CD with a label. And then in the reviews, I was already labeled a Wandelweiser composer.
That fast.
Yeah. So this, it just takes its own way after a while.
And what do you appreciate in Wandelweiser, or also just being here now at Klangraum?
It is a very focused and a very open-minded group of people that, quite different people, that share an interest in a certain way to work and be with each other in a musical setting and share a sort of mental world and almost confession, which is very rare.
Mm-hmm.
And wonderfully is international.
Yes, it is very international.
And that's something you can only grow into. You cannot make that. Yes, and this togetherness of different aspects of how to deal with each other, with questions of music, of life, of art, is something very precious.
Mm-hmm. So now you're composing for the human voice or things you're singing yourself. How is that now for you? And what do you find special or challenging about writing for the human voice?
My approach really comes out of my practical work, about that I know the voice for many years, my voice, but I also have done a lot of teaching. I started very early just because I was somehow attracting people. The people would come and say, could you teach me, or could I come for lessons? And I have been working with groups very, very much also. And in that work, after having warmed up the voice, after having done exercises, there was also the question, what to do now? Of course, we can do the conventional stuff. Everybody sings a song or works on a song, or we take such and such choir piece. But I was curious, really curious, to find other ways to work with this. And while warming up voices, and I invented a lot of exercises. So there were already so many ideas of parts of pieces or pieces that came up, that I was thinking, well, would it be possible, you know, to transfer these directly into a sort of piece?
But do you think it is easier for you to compose for the voice because you know it so well?
Yes, I don't know if I would say easier, but I think it's very, well, in a way, it's not quite the right word. It's logic, or it is something that is, it just lies so near, because I know this instrument, if it is an instrument, I doubt it is an instrument. And also, I must say, I think there is something missing. I mean, for people that want to work voice, either professionals or semi-professional or non-professionals, whatever, there's a lot of interest to do that. And many people, if they're not professional, have difficulties with pitch. Mm-hmm. So how to find a good pitch? And they are not very self-confident with pitch, so they will avoid that. So if you do an improvisation, everybody starts making and it's so boring. It's just hiding between these little mm-hmm. sounds. So build bridges, you know. Try to encourage to use a voice, not just with but with different colors of voice, and allow them to choose the pitches by themselves, or offer a few bridges into certain pitches, whatever. So it was also coming out of a lack of repertoire in that way. Mm-hmm. And even as a professional in my generation, well, before knowing Wandelweiser, actually, I must say, I found very few pieces that I was keen to work. There was quite a few very difficult pieces, very much using the fully classical color of voice, showing all the virtuosity that mm-hmm. you can do. And when I started to be interested, I was really disappointed. I was going to these concerts and I thought, well, they are all continuing to sing not necessarily opera, but classical mm-hmm. style. So there's vibrato, there is this posture, there's full voice, there is whatever. And I was missing other possibilities, mm-hmm. other pieces, and came to the point again to say, well, if they are not there,
you're doing
I might try to do something.
Yeah. I know that most of the time so far you've sung your pieces yourself, but I think now slowly other people are singing them too, your music. How does it feel for you if somebody else sings your music?
Oh, I love it. I really enjoy that.
So you can easily let go whatever they do with it.
Absolutely, absolutely. I have noticed I don't really mind if it's different from what mm-hmm. I thought it would be. I'm really happy if people can make use of my ideas mm-hmm. or feel mm-hmm. that they would like to do so. Yeah, that's very, very easy. Mm-hmm. Though the solo pieces, this has happened less with the solo pieces, and also they are not notated as well mm-hmm. as some other pieces. And this is something I'm only learning now, really, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. notation.
Yes, yes. Oh, I assume that's an interesting part.
Yeah.
When I was at Basel 2017 again, and you're also curating things for the IGENM, what was very interesting for me was when you called me or asked me to sing there, and you had like a little festival. It was all about voice, different pieces, coloring, and for me it was in a way also so touching that you called me, because you're like a singer like me, and you were actually in this program not performing yourself. Yeah, we were just organizing it, and I'm a person, I think we had like what I call competition long enough, and I wish just much more that we do things together, we are cooperating or co-creating things, and in that way it was very nice for me that I got hired by another singer.
Yeah,
so that was very great for me.
Yeah, well, competition between singers is something very happens very easily. Also, I must say, in this context, the IGNM Basel International Society of New Music, that's mm-hmm. the group. When I took this position, I said, well, this is not to promote ourselves, because this had happened before mm-hmm. quite a bit. And I don't think it's right to use an official platform and funding from the city to put yourself on stage. So there's really a taboo in this group in Basel, mm-hmm. Which sometimes is a little bit bitter, because you work a lot and you're not getting paid for it. But at the other side, it's very good to not think at all, what would I like to do, but whom would I like to invite? What would I like to program? How could I compose a program like that one? You know, the Words and Music, it was called Words and Music, and it was quite contradictory mm-hmm. positions that I had programmed. I think only when you are not allowed to think what I would like to do, you come to new ideas mm-hmm. how to curate contemporary music on stage. You know? Because this so far is not so developed.
I know.
So they're now in Basel starting also a program at the Hochschule, mm-hmm. curating contemporary music.
Great.
Yeah, a CAS, so you have to pay, it's not a master. Mm-hmm. And I think that's fantastic, because I think there's quite a bit to learn on that side, you know, not to do the whole old ideas of curating new music, or not just think how can I make it as soft enough that a lot of people mm-hmm. will come, mm-hmm. but really develop some new ideas, what that could be, mm-hmm. and how the idea of proceeding towards something unknown could be revealed in programming. So this is how it came. It was a nice chance for me to say, I would really like Antoine's piece. I would really like to have Irene. So this is the moment.
Mm-hmm. Great. Okay. Then I would like to know from you how you approach your so-called time management. And do you have any advice for the rest of us?
Oh. I certainly don't have any advice, because I think that's one of the things everybody has to find out for himself. One of the biggest steps through the years was concerning time management, was to really bundle my teaching.
Mm-hmm.
So I have become very, very strict with that and say, it's only that day, it's only those 2 days. And when engaging private students, which I have done only very little in the last years, always have said, you must be prepared that I cannot take certain dates because I'm on tour. I think the clearer you are in your head how you want to use your time, the easier you can manage. And as long as I didn't dare to compose and I didn't have the confidence that I could really develop something, I was much easier giving my time away. and it is really closely linked.
That's great. And when you compose, do you have certain times, or do you need long time frames, or how can I imagine
I need long time mm-hmm. frames. Mm-hmm. So my life is, in a way, it is split between France and Basel. Mm-hmm. I'm in France a lot, but, not quite 50%, I must say. In France, I write every day.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it is very, very little, this is a sort of deal I have with myself. And if it is one or two words,
mm-hmm.
but you're going to write.
Mm-hmm.
And that is very good for me. In Basel, I cannot continue that. Otherwise, I try to keep time free. I work very slow. And I found out that my way to develop ideas is not necessarily sitting at mm-hmm. my desk and writing. So a lot of ideas might pop up while I'm in the woods
mm-hmm.
looking for mushrooms. So I usually then have a little notebook with mm-hmm. me to write stuff down, or I might even interrupt and go straight home to write these ideas down. But I have noticed that a lot of things, it is really parallel with the mushrooms. They, after having been sitting there long enough, they pop up,
mm-hmm.
and you just have to be ready to
mm-hmm.
to catch them. But in that moment, you have to be very, very clear to do so, and not say, "Oh, I will remember and write it down mm-hmm. later." You have to be disciplined and say, "I'm going straight to my desk and write it down." But I think that's really very different for every person. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm.
What are you thankful for today?
Oh. You mean today or in general?
You can today? Answer it anywhere you like.
Many things. I'm grateful for my life so far, and having had the time to come to the point where I am now and still feel this, it's just a beginning. I'm grateful also for my private life and my physical health, but I'm grateful having found this, let's call it community, Wandelweiser, which is so open and so inspiring. Yeah.
Mm. And who or what has played the greatest role in shaping you, and what inspires you?
Life itself.
Okay. Yeah, well, life is a great, great teacher. And what does it mean for you to be true to yourself, or called authentic, in this music business? And how do you keep true to yourself?
I don't think that's something you really choose. And I wouldn't know where untruthfulness starts or ends, or truthfulness begins. I very much believe that it is the consequence of some seeds
mm-hmm.
that were set in different moments of your life, and for some you have nothing to do with them, they came from outside, others you in a way have influenced or even invited them, again others came by accident
mm-hmm.
or whatever you want to call it. And I mean, it's fascinating which ones of those seeds mm-hmm. grow and grow bigger mm-hmm. and which ones stop to grow
yeah.
at a certain point.
Yeah, and then a lot of them you will only find out when looking back. I mean, while
exactly.
you're on the track, you
exactly
you make decisions.
Yeah.
And I mean, you probably know that too. There is this very famous speech by Steve Jobs where he He talks about, you know, he was at university and then he dropped out. And then the only course he took was on calligraphy, like this nice painting of letters. And he then said too, looking back, it was like just connecting the dots, because, you know, this feeling for this aesthetic, for this writing, obviously helped him then later on to produce those machines we know all know about. But I find that sometimes also very fascinating when you're like, oh, this is why you have done that or that, and then oops, like we said before, and suddenly you're somewhere, and sometimes you don't even know how you got there.
I do have a certain trust and belief in intuition and instinct somehow, without being able or wanting to clarify it anymore. So I think there is a certain logic of how things, or consequence even, how things happen.
But I think if you trust this intuition or instinct or however you call it, then you're probably very truthful, because then you just go your way.
Maybe.
Okay. What does success mean for you?
Well, I would have to start ask again, of course, what is success? I think we wouldn't do the work. I wouldn't do the work I do if I wasn't interested that it has some sort of radiance and invites answers, feedbacks, cooperations, questions. In that way, success is maybe something, or if I define it maybe in a way that this dialogue, this communication, this intertwinement with surrounding, with a selected community, family, as part of the world, if this comes to life and stays lively. Success, if I would maybe think it in a more open way, or if I say different, I would be satisfied with what I do if I feel that it has some sort of energy to leave a trace, and not necessarily a materialistic trace, but that some of the things I work on are input for other people to continue with that work, as I feel I am doing. You know, I'm continuing a lot of things. I'm continuing part of my mother's energies and parts of her life, and some of my teachers, some of the people I decided to be friends with, or I met by accident. So I feel that I'm quite connected to generations before me, especially artists, musicians, generations, and especially women in that field. And I'm glad if I can pass some of that on. And I also have somehow the trust that it's not lost. However, you know, what I do, it is, if I have put it there and there, if there's a few traces, it doesn't have to be so many. It will somehow help in the balance of the worldwide energy net or whatever, you know. Success in a way of giving a share to something of a bigger community.
And is there anything that drives you forward, or do you have a vision?
I think there's a lot that drives me forward, but I wouldn't know how to name it. I mean, when I was small, it was really, I was driven forward by singing. Mm. I was singing so much without deciding that I want to sing.
Mm-hmm.
It might have been similar with
yes,
you.
Yes, I was always singing.
And that's a very, very clear energy, even, you know, if you're not able to grab it always. And now, well, I know there is this energy which has a lot to do with my voice and all the things I've mentally have grouped into that field of singing and voice. But there's not a vision in a bigger dimension, you know, that I would be able to change the world or whatever. It's not that. But there is, I would say that clearly a vision without being able to define it more precisely.
Yeah,
or
but it's somehow
concrete.
Like an inner compass or something
yeah,
you have,
very
obviously.
Much. Yeah, very much. And I'm never bored.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what this is. You know, and I think probably that speaks for itself.
Yes, yes. Okay. Even though if you're like bored in a way of being empty, I mean, that's probably what you experience when you do your walks or look at the mushrooms, then ideas just come. I mean, I experience that a lot, even though I'm not composing, my ideas go in other ways or in this podcast or wherever.
Yeah.
But through Corona, actually, I'm meditating so much more than I've done before. And I got the best ideas in the last few months.
Yeah.
And as you said, I would put them into practice right away. And everything was like, bam, 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 going super. And I was like, this is so nice to just be in this flow and allow this to myself. Mm-hmm. Actually, we're now at the last question. And is there anything you would like to give as a tip to young artists or you would have given yourself when you were younger?
Well, it's believe in yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Trust that you, if you wish to find something, you can find it. But it does mean commitment.
Mm-hmm.
And just be aware of that.
I know a person who likes to say the words, which are very, very simple, but I like them and maybe they also fit to that. She always said, trust the process. And for me, that's very... Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What I have a little bit on my tongue still is I feel also in that way, times have changed a lot. And it's different for younger people now, for different generations, to deal with that. Sometimes I feel that they are so self-conscious that I'm almost a little bit frightened.
Ah, okay.
At the other side, then I ask myself, what kind of self-consciousness is it? And maybe I might have even looked the same, even though I wasn't.
Mm.
But from the standpoint I have now, with the age of 60, I think trust and being ready to pay the price of being puzzled, not making the steps that you expect from yourself, and not giving up this trust, that's the way.
Mm. Well, I thank you so much for this great talk, dear Marianne, and we'll enjoy the next few days with you at Klangraum.
Thank you, Irene. Listen to you soon.
You will.
This was the interview with Marianne Schuppe. I really hope that it could inspire you. And you know, I'm always enjoying it when you want to email me or write me your ideas or suggestions. Thank you very much that you tuned in with me today. I really hope that you liked it and that it inspired you. You would do me a great favor if you could tell your friends and colleagues about this podcast. I think there are already 11 or 12 English episodes, and so you have something to listen to. Thank you very much. I wish you all the best. Live your music, live your life, and see you next time. Yours, Irene. Thank you.